slam knife.
Merry almost Christmas time.
From a podcast of the cinema.
Yes.
Which is brought to you by...
Reed Martin's book, Reed Martin's independent film guide, The Real Truth, is now available on paperback at Amazon or as an ebook from iTunes.
That's right. Smooth delivery.
And don't you forget it.
How are you, Alonzo Duralde of Los Angeles Film Critics Association?
I am tired, Dave White, not of Los Angeles Film Critics Association.
That's right. Not of Los Angeles Film Critics
Association. Yeah, you just reap the benefits of my screeners without having to actually go through the marathon voting meeting like I just came home from, which actually was not, compared to some years, this was a pretty smooth one.
We've had these discussions before.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I don't like groups. Secondly, I like being able to be here in the home, sitting comfortably, enjoying the screeners that you get without having to do anything for them myself. That's the second thing.
How nice for you.
The third thing is, did I say I don't like groups? I don't like groups.
Mm.
Let's just double down on that. I don't like meetings. Listen, this is a meeting to me.
Oh, this right now?
So is LKTV. This is like two meetings a week. Also, there's the third meeting that we have every week where you and I plan our week together, and I write down all of your appointments in my at-a-glance so that I can see, so that I can keep control of your comings and goings.
Yes. I know you love to think that.
And
you know what? As linoleum knife ink becomes more of a thing,
yes,
that will require more meetings, more planning.
I guess what I'm trying to say is,
and I know you love planning.
The meetings I don't like are the ones that involve other people that aren't you.
I see.
Because then I have to try to make everyone behave my way. That is not possible.
No.
In a room full of film critics. And I don't like other people's opinions about things because mine is the best.
Well, what, but,
so if people are voting for movies that I think are barf, it's going to be really hard for me to sit in the room and not actually make the barf sound.
I might have accidentally done that once or twice today. I try not to.
What? Okay. You just came home like 30 minutes ago and you told me the results.
Yeah.
Which is you're going to do.
Which we'll go over
for the folks here in a second. You did not tell me that you made a barfy noise. How loud was it?
Not terribly loud, but there were.
Who heard you?
I don't know because I was sitting in like the second row, so most of the house was to
my
back.
Did you say the word, oh barf, or did you go.
Closer to the ladder. There was some championing.
Ah!
There was some championing of.
I would marry you all over again, like right now.
There was some championing of Jennifer Aniston's performance in She's Funny That Way.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, now I did not see She's Funny That Way.
Yeah, well, for starters, spoiler, she's not funny. No one's funny. Nothing is funny in that movie.
What? Is that the Peter Bogdanovich movie?
Yes. Painful.
Okay. I didn't see it. I heard it was awful.
It is.
I don't dislike Ms. Aniston.
No.
I'm a huge fan of her recent Aveeno commercial.
Yes, yes.
As we've discussed
that.
On
LKTV,
a podcast of the television.
Correct.
Which y'all should be listening to if you aren't already.
No, most of my barf sounds were more of a mutter.
Can you give me a hint as to who
championed
her performance?
I'll tell you that off mic. most of my negativity was expressed via mutter. For example, there was not a big surge. It wasn't like I don't even know that it placed in the top five, but. I was surprised at how many votes the screenplay for Steve Jobs got. And I'm thinking, you know,
people like Aaron Sorkin.
Things that I like about that movie, the screenplay is not high on the list.
Well, that movie is all screenplay. That movie is people walking through halls.
I know.
Going yakety yak.
I know. But I think.
So if you're going to like that movie, but I think y'all did like it enough to vote for
Michael Fassbender as our best actor.
Yeah, then that's understandable. Like, I'm not even going to have a problem with that.
Well, I there are things I like about that movie. The writing is not among them. The structure of that movie.
And I have a lot of problems with the way you guys vote on things because it doesn't reflect...
Because it's not you.
Because
yes.
It doesn't reflect my choices exactly.
Uh-huh, I know. Poor you. well, you know, it's funny. We were talking before about the whole...
Let's talk about what's important, though.
Oh, what's that?
When the awards dinner happens...
Yes.
What's the food going to be?
I don't know.
Is it going to be that chicken
probably.
Leg?
It's probably that chicken leg. Probably that rubber chicken. I'm not an officer anymore, so I don't go to the test dinner.
Here's what I like about that chicken. The skin.
Mm-hmm.
That's always nice. It's crispy. Mm-hmm. Generally quite crispy.
Yes.
I like the bed of, like, polenta or mashed potatoes that they put it mm-hmm. on. It's very... It soaks up all the juices.
Yes.
The juices.
The juices.
The juices. It soaks up...
Yeah,
it soaks up all the juices, and juicy got me crazy.
Clearly. You are a juicy fruit.
So,
we were talking about the whole notion of...
I like that little creme brulee that they give you at the mm-hmm. end. It's always the same meal. Does the hotel have a corporate meal selection, and then you guys just pick the same one?
Yeah, usually for catering, for a group the size that we would have. Yeah, there's
choices.
There's like about three or four things.
The choice that you guys make is always, like, give us that chicken again.
We generally, yeah. But there's a vegetarian alternative, you know. There are other options.
No, I'm not complaining. A, it's not free, but I mean, it's a meal someone else is making for me.
There you go.
So I'm happy about that. I'm happy when I get to watch famous people eat.
Mm-hmm. Or not eat, as the case
is. Or not eat. Or not pass me that damn butter.
Edie Falco.
And I'm especially happy watching Julie Delpy clean her plate and then start in on Richard Linklater's. and actually hear the words come out of her mouth, "I'm so hungry."
She was awesome.
She was great.
How much do we love Julie Delpy after
really,
having a meal with her?
Really into her for the rest of my life.
like if I don't like her next movie, I'm just gonna have to say, well, you know, I had a great meal with her.
I had a great
once.
Dinner with her once. We didn't talk but like three words, but it was a pleasure watching her dine.
She was a trooper. Anyways, I keep trying to say, and you keep cutting me off.
We were
talking before about the whole idea of honoring people for more than one thing over the course of a year.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, we voted Carter Burwell as the best score for Carol, and then mm-hmm. we voted to add Anomalisa to it. He's actually done several other scores this year, but those are the two we decided to honor.
Yeah.
There was discussion about whether or not to add... when we gave Michael Shannon Best Supporting Actor for 99 Homes, there was discussion about whether or not to also add his supporting role in The Night Before,
yes.
Which some people immediately poo-pooed, and I tried to remind this is the group that the year that Angelica Houston won for The Grifters, they also honored her for The Witches, and I
yes.
thought that was super cool. I wasn't even in the group yet. I just remember being impressed by that.
Yeah.
To no avail. We didn't vote for that. Yeah. But interestingly, when Mr. Fassbender won for Best Actor for Steve Jobs, no one even raised the issue, even as a sort of a point of order or whatever,
yes.
about Macbeth.
Right.
Didn't even come up.
Why?
Because I guess nobody felt like it.
Maybe no one's seen it.
It opens this weekend. I'll be talking about it later in the program.
Yeah.
I think it was just...
I haven't seen it yet.
It was... I mean, even I think Marion Cotillard got a couple of supporting actress votes for playing Lady Macbeth, but it just didn't even... So I don't know if by that point of the day people were just exhausted and want to go home.
Marion Cotillard's in Macbeth?
Yeah, she's Lady Macbeth.
But I'm stoked because I'm really into her.
She's real good. Yeah. I think it's one of her best... I'd say her best English language performance.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about more about that later.
Okay.
So big winners, Spotlight got Best Picture, Mad Max won Direction and production design and cinematography.
Yeah.
We gave editing to The Big Short. Actor was Michael Fassbender. Actress to Charlotte Rampling for Andrew Higgs.
Have you seen The Big Short yet?
I have not.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It's on my list. It's my stack of things I got to see before I do my top 10 list.
We have almost everything sitting by the television right now.
Charlotte Rampling got Best Actress for Andrew Higgs, 45 Years.
Yeah.
Best Supporting Actress was Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina.
Did they send us Creed, by the way?
I don't know that they have. I heard some people are getting it, but I don't know about us.
All right.
Apparently, somebody was complaining today they were trying to get one from Warner, and they were being like, oh, we don't have those ready yet. And I said, oh, gosh, award season happened so soon this year. We didn't see it coming. Best foreign film was Son of Saul.
Fine.
Yeah, okay. I know you love The Assassin. You can't complain about Son of Saul until you see Son of Saul.
But it's not going to be better than The Assassin.
Well, you don't know.
I do. And here's how I know. Mm. If Hou Hsiao-hsien makes a movie, it's the best one.
Uh-huh.
Other people lose. I'm sorry, other people.
Too bad,
other people. If Hou Hsiao-hsien makes a movie, then he made the best movie.
You watch Son of Saul, and then you can vent all the livelong day about
it. I will watch Son of Saul, and I'm sure it's good. If you guys said it was the best one, you're wrong, but I'm sure it's good.
I haven't seen Son of Saul either. No. So. But I was very excited that The Tribe was runner-up for Best Foreign Film, because I am a big fan of that movie.
When I saw The Tribe, it really overwhelmed me. But mm-hmm. since The Tribe, mm-hmm. I've become less enamored of it, because it feels like it feels borderline exploitive to me now.
Hmm.
After sitting on it for several months.
Hey, well, you're wrong.
Okay, maybe I am. I'm willing to accept that I might be wrong about The Tribe, but I do know The Assassin is the best.
Well, we didn't give it anything, so there.
I hate groups.
Well, then the Dave White Film Critics Organization can give it all the awards it wants.
Who would like to join the Dave White Film Critics Association? Well,
apparently no one, because you don't like groups. You're not going to let anybody in.
If I can be the boss of the group and tell everyone what to do, then I'm fine with that group.
So you want
that's the other
you
group.
Want an
that's
army
kind
of
group
of yes men and nabobs.
Here's what I want. Remember that time Eminem performed at the MTV awards, and there were 200 Eminem clones that walked in.
Yes,
and they all stood. They all marched in like little like Eminem youth.
Uh huh. You want a bunch of fat shadies?
Fat shadies.
Did they have to be juicy?
It would behoove them
to be juicy fat shadies?
to have juicies. Yes. Yeah. A lot of juicies.
But, you know, what's always interesting about the vote is just to see where the room is going and who's excited about what and, you know, things that I think are sort of a long shot. Like I went in thinking, oh yeah, Charlotte Rampling was great in 45 Years. I bet no one else has seen it, or
right.
I bet that they're the,
right.
the, she's not forefront on people's
and
minds.
Then boom, y'all gave
and
her
she won. Yeah. And I was kind of hoping for a little more traction for Sam Elliott and Grandma, and not
Sam
so much.
Sam Elliott is after. I mean, Lily Tomlin is the best thing about Grandma. Sam Elliott is also really good.
In
a movie that I'm not super into.
I understand.
I'm into the performance.
But what I think is so great about Sam Elliott and Grandma is that we have been conditioned over the years to have Sam Elliott show up and be Sam Elliott, and it's great, uh-huh. and nobody plays Sam Elliott like Sam Elliott.
That's right.
But here's a movie where Sam Elliott shows up and plays a character who is not Sam Elliott, and it's kind of exciting to watch.
Yep.
So that's the anything else you're dying to know about the LAFCA vote? Oh, we drove everybody in the internet crazy again by taking a lunch break. How dare we?
I only care if you drove Jeffrey Wells crazy.
Well, of course. Jeffrey Wells is always the leader of that parade. And so we've started calling it the Jeffrey Wells Annual Memorial Lunch. But this Greg Elwood also tweeted, could you guys please wrap it up by 3? It's like, you know what? I'm sorry, internet award pundits, if your job exists to make you guys be stuck with having to cover this at the moment that it happens. We're also at work, and we're doing our thing, and we're all doing our best.
And hungry.
Yes.
What was lunch?
Cold cuts.
Oh, okay.
But it was good.
Like good ones?
Good ones.
All right.
I had a nice roast beef and turkey. Mustard on top, mayonnaise on the bottom. And then, get this. I got a.
I had two corn dogs, and I'm paying for it now.
I was gonna say, yeah, and yeah that's I just not was not good for you.
I knew it was. I knew
old
I did,
man.
I knew I was doing a bad thing.
Where were you that was serving corn dogs?
It's not important.
Okay, tell me off mic. Here's what I did for dessert, though.
Yes,
I took a Rice Krispie square.
Yeah,
and I put a piece of peppermint bark on top of it.
That's a really good idea.
It was so good.
Did the idea catch on?
No, actually, I did it by accident. I was just stacking things on a dessert plate.
You were just stacking food on top of food.
Exactly. And
I can't decide between these seven desserts. I'm just going to stack them up.
And Amy Nicholson said,
dessert.
Amy Nicholson goes, did you put a peppermint bark on top of a Rice Krispie square? That's brilliant. I said, apparently I did.
That's a woman who appreciates innovative thought.
Indeed. She's totally outside of the box for this sort of thing. So I took a bite. It was great. I ate the whole thing that way. So this holiday season, if you're at a party that's serving Rice Krispie squares and peppermint bark, and the odds are good that you will be.
You'll be at, yeah, actually, you'll be, the odds are good that you'll be at one serving peppermint bark. Because that's a thing that people have now at their Christmas parties.
Yes, but everybody serves Rice Krispie squares all the time.
No.
They're ubiquitous.
No, that's us.
No.
That's people like us.
In the real world, they do. In fact, probably more so, like, between the coasts.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm venturing to guess.
I'm saying folks.
Folks serve Rice Krispie squares. The peppermint bark might be harder to come by, but, you know, right. Not during the holidays. So.
I guess, yeah.
So the hot sports tip
I'm
for me.
I'm thinking about schmancy Los Angeles parties.
Oh, well, yeah, no, they're too dumb to appreciate Rice Krispie squares.
Having said this, we're probably not having Rice Krispie squares at our own Christmas
well,
party.
Well, let's look into that.
There's a whole lot of other things that are going to happen.
Fine. Here, have this pocket of air with a sprig of kale. That's, you know, what you get at these schmancy parties.
Well, that's not what's... I mean,
not
I'm
at
not
our party.
I'm not saying that's what's happening at our party. I'm
no,
just
heavens
saying that
no.
I'm not planning on making Rice Krispie treats.
Fine. Maybe someone else will.
Maybe someone will.
I am using the secret to bring Rice Krispie treats...
unto thine mouth.
Within my sphere.
Attracting it to... your lips.
Whatever it takes.
Are we done talking about the awards?
Are we? You had questions. I want to make sure I had answered them all.
I guess I'm done with my questions about the awards.
All right.
Because they didn't...
There were no fisticuffs or anything. You know,
I'm going to say something about Spotlight.
Okay.
I think it's really a great movie.
Yes.
However... when I think of Mad Max Fury Road and Carol,
yes,
which are the equal of Spotlight, all three of
sure.
those films occupy the same level of like excellence.
Mm-hmm.
What separates Carol and Fury Road for me is the way I want to watch them again and again.
Mm. Well,
I have seen Fury Road twice. I fully intend to go back to see Carol in a movie theater during its run over Christmas.
Right.
I've seen Spotlight once. I understand what it is. I think it's a really, really excellent film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll be watching it again, though.
It's not a film to love. It's not a film that is... visually challenging or visually rich. I mean, it is.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, but it's not.
I'm not saying that that there's no thought put into it at all.
Yeah.
It is very effective storytelling in all of the things that it draws together, in the way that it's written, in the way that it's edited, in
yes.
the acting, all that stuff. And yes, and the way that it's shot. But it is not. A movie that you're going to...
Its plainness is incredible.
Yeah, you're not going to go back and sort of drink in the imagery the way you will with Mad Max and Carol.
And those two films are for me, they are the kind of movies
yeah.
that you love and you revisit.
I was a little surprised about Spotlight. I mean, I knew there was affection for it and people liked it. And, it won our Best Screenplay Award.
Yeah.
But director was so close between George Miller and his runner-up Todd Haynes that I thought, oh, okay, well, this might be one of those things where maybe we split and, you know, Miller gets director and Carol gets best picture. Wouldn't that
right.
be great?
Yeah.
And then it didn't go that way. I was kind of surprised. So really all Carol is coming away with is score. It was runner-up in production design and runner-up in director.
What kind of production design?
Mad Max.
Fury Road, okay.
Yeah. So, what are you going to do? So, you know,
join a group.
What I find hilarious is I was looking online at people on Twitter sort of before the awards, sort of talking about what we might do and blah, blah, blah. And what's hilarious is when that's for all critics. But when they talk about, they make it out as though we have this clear-cut agenda that we've sat down and figured out.
Right, that's ridiculous. They don't understand how the group works.
As James Rocky says, take more than two critics out for pizza and see how much consensus there is on anything.
Right.
You know, the notion that we have this thing of like, oh, we love this guy and we're going to punish that guy. And, you know, Jeffrey Wells wrote some ridiculous thing about how we have our pet ponies or something.
He wrote something ridiculous?
Imagine that.
What are you talking about?
So, it is so much just kind of comes down to... to the mood in the room and everybody in there who, like Dave White, thinks their opinion should reign supreme, having to come to some sort of consensus.
AKA is better.
So believe me, that stuff is there's no sweeping agenda at hand. But I am proud of the group. I think we do some really cool stuff. I love that we were the only people that gave Tom Hardy Best Actor for Locke last year. I mean, nobody else did that. We honor like the actress from the Korean film Poetry or the French actress from the film about the painter we did a couple years ago. I'm blanking. The woman from Seraphine.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to Brazil. You know, the right. and Angelica Houston for The Witches. Stuff
I'm
like
not
that.
Saying there's anything wrong with you guys at all. Okay. I think you guys do, you know, fine votes.
Thank you. We just don't do
they're
the...
just not exactly my votes, and therefore...
We don't vote a straight Dave White ticket.
That's a problem for me. And it always has been, and always will continue to be.
Fine.
You just mentioned James Rocky.
Yes.
Who is our personal friend.
Yes.
And who has been a guest on this show.
He has. We were a guest on his shows when he had one.
We were a guest on his show back when he had one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's no longer a film critic.
Right.
I don't know if our listeners are paying attention to that ripple in the world of film criticism.
He was writing for me at The Wrap recently.
He left being a film critic, intentionally left.
He has literally washed his hands so that he can bake.
He is now a baker. This is technically not an advertisement for him, although it kind of is.
It's unpaid, but
it's an unpaid advertisement.
He has offered us a sweet deal to pass along to you guys.
Yes. He is...
a literal sweet deal.
He has a business now called Hello Blondie.
Yes.
And the first item, I am sure in the future there will be more.
No doubt.
But he's making blondies.
Mm-hmm.
He's making them regular. He's making them gluten-free. He's making them vegan.
Three different varieties.
I've only had the normal kind, and they're delicious, but I'm sure the other ones are, too.
Mm-hmm. He was telling us all the chemistry involved of, like, when you've got gluten-free flour, how do you get the bubbles to form in the thing? And that. And I was like, okay, that all sounds great, James Rocky. I don't know what you're talking about. But.
Here's what you do. Go to... Hello Blondie, Blondie, like the band, like the comic strip. Hello Blondie Sweets. HelloBlondieSweets.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use the code word linoleum, LINOLEUM,
on checkout,
you get 20% off your order. Compare the price of these to a cupcake from Sprinkles or Crumbs or any of your local fancy cupcake emporiums that you might happen to have in your city.
Emporia?
Boutique cupcake.
Yes.
Eateries. They're already cheaper than that. And with 20% off, they're even cheaper.
And he ships, what?
I guess he ships anywhere.
Around the United States?
Yeah.
And... and hey, it's the holidays. You're entertaining. It is time for tasty sugar treats.
Here's what I know we are having at our Christmas party.
Hello, Blondies.
Blondies. Yeah.
Yay.
And some business cards.
Excellent.
Apparently.
I'm totally down with that.
So, Linoleum. code word linoleum gets you 20% off of those. I was just talking to him. I was like, you know what? I want to talk about your blondies on the show. He's like, thank you. Here, offer your listeners 20% off.
That, done and done.
Yeah. Nobody else come to me with the expectation of free advertising. We're doing this for our personal friend.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so movies. You've seen four. I've seen one. Why don't you quickly talk about the three you've seen?
Sure. Okay, well, I touched on Macbeth a little bit, but yes. It is a new adaptation of the Scottish play. And it's fine. It is, it's
only fine. It's late in the afternoon. I'm getting a little sleepy.
And I'm talking, so that, of course, that's yawning time for you.
It's
fine. I mean, it is solid. I don't want to say competent. That sounds like I'm damning with faint praise. But it's not, you know, there have been some real game-changing Macbeths. You know, there's the Roman Polanski, there's the Orson Welles. There's Akira Kurosawa's Throne of Blood. This one is good. It's fine. Ooh, and pizza's here. Okay, pizza break over.
Okay, so it's like this. I didn't want to cook. And it's late Sunday afternoon. We never record this late.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, let's just get a pizza. I assumed it would be here after the show was over.
Wrong.
I was wrong. I'm already a big fan of how we said the same thing at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm kind of proud of us.
Oh, wow. It's magic.
Yeah, pizza magic. What movie were you talking about?
Macbeth. So it's a pretty
Pizza.
It's a pretty streamlined adaptation. I feel like it's a shorter version. And I feel like certain speeches maybe pop up in different places than they do normally. I'd have to go back and reread the text.
Oh, so they fixed Shakespeare.
No, which, you know, they interpreted it, which is what you do. And, it's got a very cool sort of bloody orange kind of tinge to all the battle sequences, and
you don't say.
It's very, very Scottish, you know. Like, this is a lot of cloud cover and a lot of brogues. But at the same time, like when the weird sisters appear, they just show up in the middle of the battlefield, and you know they're just crazies raining around them. They're just sort of standing there, like, yeah, whatever. And they, you know, when they talk to Macbeth, Cotillard's really good, I think, and so is Fassbender. It's, you know, it's not a game changer. There are, you know, I think that's the tricky part about doing this sort of adaptation is, like, you have to stack up against all the other ones, you know. I wouldn't recommend it as the Macbeth to watch when you're trying to get out of the book report, because I feel like there are certain, not giant liberties, but there's a little bit of, like I said, some tightening and some taking things out of sequence. But it's interesting, and, you know, David Thewlis is in it, and Paddy Considine, so, you know, it's good. It's worth seeing. Especially if you're a Shakespeare fan. I also saw The Lady in the Van.
Hang on.
What?
My DVD recommendation of the week.
Oh, come on.
Is Macbeth.
Which one?
The Polanski one.
All right.
It's dark. It's brutal.
And you couldn't have waited to do this when we do the DVD recommendation?
It is filled with grief.
It's great. It's one of my favorite ones.
First thing he made after Sharon Tate's death.
Yes.
And you can feel that.
Yeah.
Go watch that for Christmas, everyone.
Well, okay, fine. My DVD recommendation this week was going to be Throne of Blood. So, fine. We're just going to do it now.
We've already interrupted for pizza. We might as well just scramble everything.
Yes, it's all. What's the word I want here? Cattywampus.
Indeed, cattywampusing.
Yes.
Okay, so
I saw The Lady in the Van, which
we also have on screener, and I haven't sat down.
Which everyone but me seems to like. it's about Alan Bennett, who wrote it. And makes himself the key character.
Okay.
And about how apparently when he moved into this neighborhood of London in the early 70s, there was this crazy old woman in a van who would kind of make her way, like, parking at various, in front of different houses up and down the street. And some people were nice to her, and other people tried to just pretend she wasn't there, and he sort of wound up kind of in this weird relationship with her, even though they were never close, and she was always abrasive, but, you know, he finally, like, would let her park the van in his driveway because people were trying to vandalize it at night, and, you know, it's, I don't know. I find it really kind of obnoxious, this movie. To me, it feels like this really sort of precious depiction of the homeless and of the mentally ill.
Right.
And
is her character meant to be mentally ill?
It's suggested that it's quite possible.
Yes, I see.
That there's something happening there. Got that it. She's at least experienced some trauma.
Yes.
In her past. Bennett, you know, is divided into two characters. There's the one who lives and the one who writes. And
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Seriously. There's two Alan Bennetts in this movie.
Played by different actors?
No, same guy.
Now I'm confused.
Well, it's because he thinks of himself as being two people. The one who goes out and lives his life and the one who writes about everything. And how he makes everything about himself, which is what the lady in the van is. It's not about the lady.
That's what I do, too.
It's not about the lady. It's about Alan Bennett.
Look, I'm currently in, working on a book about my mother. But it's going to be about me.
Well, sure, because you know? it's through your point of view. I mean, okay, fine. I guess this is his point of view.
Right.
But it okay, be mindful then when you are writing this book about your mother to not reduce her to a metaphor for your life and how it changed you. Because that's what this is, and I found it nauseating.
I'm imagining my mom sitting here listening to this conversation. And hitting me in the arm. Like, yeah, what he said.
You're not making me a metaphor. I found the whole...
That is exactly what she would do.
I found the whole thing kind of obnoxious. And Maggie Smith is Maggie Smith is Maggie Smith, and she's great.
Right, and that's why I'm going to watch it anyway.
But the material
because
is...
Because, boy howdy,
it's just so like Maggie Smith. It's so like loony old sassy lady, you know. There's just not much for her to sink her teeth into. She's giving it all she's got, and she gives the movie all the pep that it has.
Right.
But generally speaking, I just got more and more annoyed by it. Because even though the Alan Bennett character is trying to be all like, oh, it wasn't a charity case. I'm just one of those British people that can't say no to obnoxious people. And so there she is.
Right.
At the same time, you see the other neighbors on the street who are more actively obnoxious toward her.
Yes.
So he still comes off as a prince by comparison.
Right, right.
Yeah, it didn't do it for me. But all the Brits who commented on the YouTube thing were like, oh, you Americans don't understand Alan Bennett. He's a national treasure.
Do you think they all talk like that?
They do. Every single one of them. Alan Bennett. Jolly good.
I would like to direct your attention to The Only Way is Essex.
Am I his mother? Yeah, so I was not down. And if you're like a super Maggie Smith fan and you'll watch her pretty much do anything, this is in the pretty much anything category.
How does she, when you live in a van,
uh-huh.
How do you have your tea?
I don't know. There's a lot of details they sort of gloss over. Like, mention is made of the fact that she always smells terrible.
Okay.
And there is a monologue.
Doesn't he invite her inside to have a shower?
Well, I think he tries to, and she never goes for it. Like, the one time you see her take a bath is when she, like, has to go to the senior center for, like, a medical examination
yes.
or something. But generally
is
speaking...
Is it like that gummo bath scene?
No. It's like
really?
One time... It's the one time in the movie that you would exhale. Because she's actually getting cleaned up. There is a lengthy discussion by the Bennett character about the... About the properties of human feces
okay.
and the major role that it played in their relationship.
Okay.
So, you know, they don't completely...
I think I'm liking this movie more and more.
They don't completely gloss that stuff over, but at the same time, it's...
You said feces. I'm available for this
Well,
movie.
That's not the word they use, but this is a clean podcast.
Okay, yeah.
That's... Even with that, this movie still felt awfully cutesy to me.
All right. Cutesy feces.
Cutesy feces.
Cutesy feces.
Juicy. Cutesy. Cutesy juices. What was the other thing I saw?
I don't know. Macbeth.
You've got the list.
Lady in the Van.
Uh-huh. Oh, Youth.
And Youth.
Ute.
Which you did not like.
I did not like.
Yeah,
I was
even
surprised.
Even though it's from the director of The Great Beauty.
Yes, which I loved, yeah. Which was on my top 10 list that year. This movie, you know, if
we all remember your top 10 list from that year.
Well, I'm citing it so because no one does. That's the point. It
really is a thing.
if
I hold it close to my heart.
Shut up. If The Great Beauty was this was Paolo Sorrentino sort of channeling the Rome movies of Fellini, Roma, yes. and La Dolce Vita.
Right.
This is his trying to do 8.5.
All right.
Because it's set at a spa.
Okay.
In the Swiss Alps. And we meet a variety of characters, including Michael Caine as a composer and conductor, who apparently is most remembered for like the simplest piece of music he ever wrote, and he's sort of annoyed by that.
Right.
Harvey Keitel is a director who's making, he's trying to make this big movie that he thinks is going to be probably his last.
Yes.
Paul Dano plays this movie star who's clearly supposed to be Johnny Depp, down to the glasses and the hair. Like he's doing Johnny
Depp. The scarves and the bracelets.
Pretty much, okay. Yeah. Rachel Weisz is Michael Caine's daughter. And it's just sort of about, growing old and the things you learn and the things you don't and what you discover about life and blah, blah, blah. And there are some nice bits to it, and it's beautifully shot the way Great Beauty was. But it just kind of goes astray, and it really, really goes wrong when Jane Fonda shows up. I love Jane Fonda.
What are you talking about?
I love Jane Fonda. I think she is a great actress.
Now I gotta watch this.
She is embarrassing in this movie.
What? She's Jane Fonda.
She's playing like this sort of aging movie star, and so they give her like this brassy blonde hair and like really unflattering kind of cakey makeup to sort of accentuate. I mean, this character looks way worse and way older than Jane Fonda ever has or will. So it's a sort of grotesque caricature of like an aging starlet trying to maintain her youth, you know.
Right.
And she has basically two scenes in the whole thing where she basically yells at Harvey Keitel to tell him why she's not going to be in his movie. And it's just so garish and overdone, and I won't be surprised if she gets an Academy Award nomination. It's that bad. I felt terrible for her and just for the movie. You're like, oh God, you've got Jane Fonda. She's so great. And she's, what are you doing to her in this movie? So yeah,
nothing she didn't approve of.
I know. So it kind of falls apart.
I'll be watching it now because I'm having cognitive dissonance here about this.
Well, okay. Go back and watch The Great Beauty. I've been bugging you for years.
Yeah.
Go watch The Great Beauty.
Okay.
And then go see this and tell me, you know.
All right. So, okay.
So yeah, youth is a mess. It's really, there are some ideas, but it just devolves into this shambles. I was really disappointed.
We both saw Krampus.
We both saw Krampus.
After seeing Krampus, I have heard about the Krampus every day.
Well, it's Sunday, and you saw it on Thursday, so that's not a huge thing.
Yes, it is a huge thing, and the reason it is because now people are talking about the Krampus. And
as seen in the major motion picture,
but
Krampus.
Other than just the as in reference to the film.
I know.
I was right the last time we talked on this show. They're going to turn it into bacon.
Mm-hmm.
The bacon trend, so annoying for so long now.
Bacon itself remains great.
Indeed.
It's all the bacon, it's the socks with bacon on it and the bacon flavored deodorant.
So here comes Krampus as a thing that people are going
to trend up your Christmas.
Consume and trend up your world with, I suppose there could be worse things that they could make popular.
Elf on the Shelf?
The Krampus, for example. The Krampus is very cool.
Yeah.
Being Santa's evil monster assistant.
I was on the I Do Movies Badly podcast this week talking about Christmas films. And I was saying that there aren't a lot of sacred cows left in our society.
No.
There used to be a lot of things where I think all of the late 60s and early 70s was about taking things that were considered heretofore sacrosanct and then, you know, like goofing on them.
Right.
And we don't hold much sacrosanct as a society anymore. There's really not much that you can be subversive about.
Mocking stuff has become deeply encoded into our way of being.
Now. But Christmas has managed, for the most part, to retain its identity as a season of wonder and a time of innocence and the children, you know, and the...
our tree.
Visions of sugar plums. I know, I'm staring at our amazing tree.
Our incredible tree, which is the best. It's our Christmas tree is the best. Wonderful. And yesterday we were having, as we were decorating it, we had friends over to decorate the tree. And...
have you revised yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
He is referring to my tendency to, after the friends leave, to rearrange ornaments on the tree that they have placed in the wrong spot. They didn't know any better that they were putting that ornament in the wrong part of the tree.
Once again, a group lets you down by not doing exactly what you wanted.
But that's not the point. The point is, someone was asking about a particularly irreverent ornament that we were given. And I have been debating whether or not I'm going to keep that ornament on the tree, because I don't want the balance tipped. You know, there are a handful, I'll say there's a handful of somewhat irreverent ornaments on the tree. They were given to us by friends who...
Define irreverent. Do you mean in the literal sense of the word? Or?
Yeah, like a satanic goat.
Oh, that would be irreverent then.
Someone did give us a satanic goat Christmas tree ornament.
Ah.
Yeah. This was last year.
I see.
I thought it was funny. But we have like over 200 ornaments on this gigantic tree.
Correct. So they blend in.
It can sit there and not overwhelm anything else.
Yeah.
In general,
it's
like
the tree's covered in pentagrams.
In general, I like this tree to reflect, I like the ornaments to reflect us and our friends, the people who gave them to us, the people who made them for us, if they homemade them. I like an earnest Christmas tree.
Yeah, an unironic holiday celebration.
I'm not using my tree as a you know.
You're not tweaking anything.
A goofing around experience. I want my tree to be real, and I want people to look at it and think it's beautiful, and to look at it and to marvel at the variety and awesomeness and beauty of those ornaments.
Did you water it today?
I got to do that when we're finished with this.
Okay. Irreverent Krampus.
Yeah, I believe that you know, The idea of taking, you know, Christmas and lampooning it in film.
Right.
There's a whole lot more of that now than there's ever been.
Yes, exactly. Like I said, that's sort of the last of the...
And I'm okay with it up to a point.
Sure.
Like, I don't want a steady diet of that. But it seems to be... Current releases seem to be tipping the scale toward that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Krampus and The Night Before, definitely. I would say Love the Coopers, no. That's a more traditional Christmas movie.
Right.
And I think that most of the current crop of traditional Christmas movies are happening on Lifetime and Hallmark.
They are.
That's where that's all happening. So I suspect that...
But the production values aren't good enough.
No, of course not. But I'm saying to make... If you want to make a studio movie...
Except for the ones made by our friend Jim Fall.
That's right. Those are gorgeous.
Those are great.
If you want to make a straightforward Christmas movie, it's probably harder to get studio funding because they think, people watch that stuff on TV all the time for free.
Right.
You know, I like Love the Coopers more than you did, but I think that... But that's an example of a movie that's actually sort of being a Christmas movie. Even though it's a dysfunctional family Christmas movie, it ends in such a way that suggests that the holiday, you know... brings good things to people.
Yes. Unless you live in the movie of Krampus.
Right.
Then you're going to die.
Yes. And, you know, and it's not like there haven't been horror movies set around holidays before. If you read my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yes.
There's a whole chapter devoted to horror movies that, you know, including stuff like Black Christmas and Silent Night, Deadly Night, and...
Would you like a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas?
Speaking of which...
Linoleum Knife listener, what you should do then is PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's our PayPal address. $20. That gets you the deluxe edition. It retails for $16.99, $17. $3 for shipping. You're paying full retail, but you're also getting it autographed, you're getting it gift-wrapped, and you're getting it stuffed with little thin papery treats that go inside a book sometimes, or don't often go inside a book, but are going into this copy.
And I will personalize that autograph to yes, you will. Or to whoever you want to give it to.
Yeah. So, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's our PayPal.
$20 or more outside the United States.
Hooray for you. And hooray for Santa Claus.
So Krampus is the second film directed by Michael Dougherty, who did the cult favorite Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat.
Several years ago.
Trick or Treat 2 has just been announced.
Really? But is he doing it?
It would appear that he is doing it,
Okay. He wrote like some of the X-Men movies. He's, you know, he's doing fine.
Yeah, he's all right.
But he's also directing now. This is the second film... behind the camera. Krampus starts out as a dysfunctional family Christmas movie, which is my favorite kind. Adam Scott and Toni Collette are a couple. He works a ton, so she doesn't see him enough, and they have this big, bougie, suburban house, and the older daughter is constantly just sort of texting with the boyfriend. The younger son... is getting to that age where
played by MJ Anthony from Chef. Right, he was this kid in Chef.
I never saw Chef, but yes, I've heard that. He's getting to that age where it's starting to get more and more awkward that he still believes in Santa Claus, but he does, and he's very, you know, defending that. And he is championed in this endeavor by his grandmother, his German grandma.
Played by Krista Stadler.
Yes, who is a German actress.
Yes.
And there's the annual invasion of the relatives. Toni Collette's sister, played by Alison Tolman, who's married to a redneck, played by David Koechner. Yeah. They have three awful children.
Yeah.
And their aunt, played by Conchita Farrell, tags along as well.
And she's mean and awful, too.
And drinks. And so the awful kids tease the boy about the Santa thing, and he finally gets really upset and decides that there is no such thing as Santa, and he rips his letter up and throws it out the window, and then suddenly things start going really badly. There's a heavy blizzard, all the neighborhood power goes out, and everybody in the house starts disappearing one by one, and there's grandma keeps stoking the fire. And eventually we learn that they have summoned, their lack of Christmas spirit has summoned the Krampus.
They are all now being dispatched one by one.
He is Santa's demonic sidekick.
In that way that PG-13 films do.
Yeah, yeah. That is a bit of a letdown that they're stuck with the PG-13 method of dispatching. But it's an inventive movie, and it uses the holiday themes really well and makes snowmen and toys and elves really, really creepy. And it goes to dark places. So and it's funny, and I had a good time with it. It could have been scarier. It could have been more tightly focused. There are times where it sort of, once things start going badly, they really should just sort of steadily ratchet the tension, and they don't always do that. But I was entertained.
You liked it more than I did.
Yes.
Here is what I liked. I liked the creature elements, the trilogy of terror qualities,
the creepy gingerbread men.
Regarding the little gingerbread men, the
Jack in the Box.
I liked what little I saw of the Krampus himself. Not enough.
Special effects by Weta, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the kid. I like the kid in the movie.
He's very good.
The kid was good in the movie.
I love Conchita Farrell. Any movie that where you're going to put a shotgun in the hands of Conchita Farrell.
There is that,
I'm
yes.
in.
Yeah. I appreciate the idea of this. Conceptually, I'm on board for this movie.
Right. They could have done more with it. Which is, I think, also kind of what we thought about seeing when we finally saw Trick or Treat this Halloween.
Yes, and I'm going to get to that in a second.
Okay, okay.
When the lights go out, literally, in the film, and they're just in the dark for the rest of the movie, I really feel like it becomes kind of visually incoherent. I feel that might be a function of its budget. Because if they let the camera linger on things, you might see the seams.
Right.
I don't know if that's the case, but it's what it felt like to me.
Well, everything's CG now. I don't think they have seams.
Well, I don't think everything was CG in this. I mean, there was a lot of...
practical.
There was a lot of practical-looking things in here. And I could be wrong about that, too. Maybe I'm just completely an idiot. But I do know, and what I'm not an idiot about, is that the camera would never... sat still for, you know, during violent moments, during, you know, that thing where we have an R rating, we can't have an R rating, so we're just going to whip the camera around and create chaos.
Well, also part of that might be that part of how you don't get an R rating is that you don't stick on things too long.
Right. And that annoys me.
Fair enough.
I don't like that. There were moments in the film where I thought, wait, I don't know who's doing something to whom.
Right. Where are we and who are we?
And so that bothered me.
I like the fact that this movie's not afraid to put a baby in peril.
No, that was cool. I forgot to say that. That was great. You think the baby's going to be killed? Hilarious. And I also don't know that I appreciated the initial... pre-monster segment of the film that was intended to be a dysfunctional family comedy. But they just kept playing on the whole sort of red state, blue state element of it, which annoyed me, and I think it's trite. I think it's been done.
But here's the thing though. That a lot of what they goof on the red staters about is guns.
Yeah.
And the guns come in handy.
Yeah, they do.
They come in real handy, they're all real happy to have one.
But those jokes before they all need the guns at the end, those jokes really do fall flat. And you're risking alienating, you know, a good chunk of your audience by basically telling them that they're unsophisticated boobs.
But I think the blue staters also come off as jerks. I mean, I don't know that anybody's winning that argument in this.
All right, I just still think it's an overdone dichotomy.
I guess I think what saves it is Alison Tolman, and basically the way that Alison Tolman responds to things and sort of kind of
in a more complex way.
Yeah, that she's basically clearly, Toni Collette has always been Miss Perfect all the time.
I'm not going to say she saves it. I'm going to say she tempers.
No, I think she makes it a lot more palatable. And you did not see season one of Fargo. Alison Tolman is a treasure.
Oh, yeah. No, no.
She's so great.
I'm sure she is. Now, regarding this and its cousin, Trick or Treat, there is something... about these two films that is the opposite of frightening for me. They feel safe. They feel like they are completely contained, and there's a level of artificiality going on in both of them I can't walk into it and feel like I'm inside something that is potentially horrifying.
They're movies about the idea of horror movies as opposed to being like, you're in this crazy situation. What could happen next? I don't know.
When I watched It Follows earlier this year, I felt like I was there. I'm in that world with those people. It feels like a real lived-in world. And this feels like a soundstage. And it feels sort of removed and, like I say, so contained that I can't get into it. Like, I don't feel like they're actually trying to present a scenario that feels like real life.
Huh. I will give them that. I think there was an attempt.
And that's
that.
Both films.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I like the house. I thought was a cool
it,
set.
It may just be coming down to production design.
Maybe. But I don't know. I think it works.
It's a thing that isn't really
I think it's more about tone, really, than anything else. But like, I love little things like, you know, when Toni Collette gets mad at everybody at dinner and then she goes in to make dessert and she's just scorching all the creme brulee with her little
that's
kitchen torch
nice,
with this look on
nice
her face.
Detail.
Like, argh!
That is a nice detail. Yeah. I appreciated a lot of things about this film.
I understand.
The same way I appreciated a lot of stuff about Trick or Treat.
Sure. And I would say that, like Love the Coopers, I understand what doesn't work in this movie.
Right.
But I got enough pleasure out of the ones parts that did work. And I mean, it was weird because I saw it you saw it at night and I saw it like first thing on a Friday morning. It was a fairly empty theater. But there were times where I was heartily laughing out loud at stuff that was either funny or scary or funny scary. And that normally I wouldn't do in a mostly empty theater. I would just sort of like chuckle to myself or smile or whatever. So I was genuinely having a good time with a lot of it. I grant you it does have problems. It's not nearly as, it doesn't live up to the promise of that trailer, frankly, that,
right.
That our friend Bill, Neil, who guests on the show, edited.
Yeah.
But it's, I still think it's good.
Yeah. The trailer did kind of get me excited.
Yeah.
And, you know. The movie's fine. How's that?
Yeah.
It's fine.
And I'd say there's a small enough Christmas horror subsection, and certainly not much of it, if any of it, is PG-13.
Correct.
That now here's a good, like, holiday. December. Here's a good December slumber party horror movie.
The original Black Christmas remains truly unsettling and frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it many times.
Yeah.
And each time I watch it, when it's over, I just feel so creeped out.
Yeah.
And like I want to check the closets. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so... lettuce.
Woo.
Subject. OEUVRE. This is from Jerry. The word you are looking for is canon.
But do people have canons? I always think of a canon as being like, you know, Western literature or something, you know. Or...
Yeah, no. This is from Tim. Tim from Baltimore.
Yes.
Hello, boys. It's Thanksgiving. Well, it was.
It was.
And yes, we know the Pilgrims really were the original teabaggers, but this time of year, I still think of the things I'm thankful for, and there are two things on my list involving you. Number one, you once described some ratty theater as being run with all the professionalism of an unlicensed daycare center. While amusing, which theater were we talking about on that day? Was it the Beverly Center?
Probably the Grove.
Perhaps. While amusing at the time, it was even funnier when the boss asked me to honestly describe her management style. I will forever be grateful to you for introducing that phrase into my and my ex-boss's lives. Number two, some of my best friends are. That's the name of a film, by the way. I can barely verbalize how much I appreciate this film. This was a far more realistic portrayal of gay life in the last days of the closet than its goofiness would lead you to believe. That it was apparently recorded off the TV by someone with a handheld camera actually added to the experience. In 1971, when this film would have been too risque to be shown in most parts of the United States, this is how news and ideas spread. Someone had a copy of something and passed it around to trusted friends who passed it on to their trusted friends. Thank God that's over with.
I assume he means the YouTube clip is somebody filming it on the television. Thing.
A nostalgic note here. I did a little research, and the film was shot in the bar that eventually became the Mineshaft, which, you know, before my time.
Yes.
I think of many pleasant evenings there, engaged in stimulating conversation and thoughtful reflection. I am so glad that smartphones didn't exist until 30 years later. You have made one cranky old git very happy.
Well, thank you, Tim.
And here's from Robbie. Hello, comic book dad and punk rock dad. First of all, I hope you two are having an absolutely incredible Thanksgiving over there in the ATL, and I hope it's at least a little less cold than it has gotten back here in California. I see a couple of critics and publications putting out their best of lists already, and I don't get it. I still have to see Carol, The Hateful Eight, and Anomalisa before I even come close to a consensus on what my favorite movies of the year are. However, unless I get dragged to some bottom-barrel holiday schlock against my will, I'm pretty much done seeing the bad movies of this year. So, without further ado, here are my top 10 movies I did not like in 2015. And yes, this list is missing such horrid titles as Get Hard and God's Not Dead 3 or whatever the Christian movies were this year. And obviously, I don't have to see all the bad stuff the way you guys have to, so this list isn't going to necessarily be the worst of the worst. It's just my personal, least enjoyable viewing experiences of the year. Number 10, Crimson Peak.
No!
We respectfully disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9, Kingsman, The Secret Service. Ugh, yes.
Correct.
Number 8, Ant-Man. Kinda.
I didn't love Ant-Man, but I didn't hate Ant-Man.
It is boring.
I felt more meh than most critics about it that seemed to like it. But
Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Ugh. Oh, that movie. It was a gunky movie.
There were elements of Me and Earl and the Dying Girl that I was into.
I liked the way they made Pittsburgh look.
Yeah. There was some production design stuff that I liked. And I did appreciate the goofy reworking of all the classic films. That
It wasn't as good as the stuff in Be Kind Rewind.
Number 6, Trainwreck.
Ooh, harsh.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Trainwreck. I did too. Here's what he has to say. This movie's phony progressivism, yowza, would be more easily forgiven if it made me laugh more. And I like Ms. Schumer quite a bit, so I blame Apatow for this. Number 5, Jurassic World.
Blech.
Parenthetically, he writes the word puke. Number 4, Chappie.
Ugh. Say it.
Parenthetically, more puke. Chappie?
Say it.
I forgot what I was supposed to say.
Chappie Book.
Chappie Book. I got to practice. I've forgotten that I'd said that. I got to... Chappie Book.
Chappie Book.
I got to go back and relearn how to say that properly.
Yeah.
Number 3, The Gunman.
Oh. A movie I'd completely even forgotten existed.
Number 2, The Cobbler.
Ugh.
This would actually be lower on my list if it didn't have the single... if it didn't have the single stupidest ending I've seen in years. The absurd lengths to which this movie goes for an unbearable father-son reunion moment is almost impressive. Number 1, a tie between Pitch Perfect 2 and Ted 2. Yes, The Cobbler is a bigger failure, but sitting through both of these movies proved to be far more agony-inducing. I was really, really wanting to get out of Pitch Perfect 2.
I was thinking that way about Ted 2.
As soon as possible. I'll tell you, the only thing that saved Pitch Perfect 2 for me was...
Rebel Wilson.
Rebel Wilson singing in the boat.
We belong.
Yes. As always, thank you all for your awesome... Oh, wait, we need a knife for this. Okay, we're absolutely not with you on Crimson Peak.
Correct.
And I guess we're not with you on Trainwreck because I laughed and laughed. And I get what you're saying about that ending with the dancing and the cheerleaders and stuff. That really kind of weirded me out. Honestly, the crying at the dad's funeral, that sort of was weird, too. I don't expect to see that kind of thing from her. And because I don't expect to see that kind of thing from her, I still don't like it.
I didn't
and
mind
that
the
may just be my failure as a human being.
I didn't mind the crying. And I suppose when I go, if I go back and look at that movie in a couple of years and sort of dwell on the whole notion of how she has to fix herself to be man-worthy. I mean, I suppose I may, like, turn on it. But at the moment, I still trust Amy Schumer enough that she's smarter than what I think she's doing here. Maybe, I don't know.
80% knife.
Yes.
Yeah, you get a solid B. Uh, P.S. This is completely selfish of me, but my birthday is on the 28th, which, as of this letter, is tomorrow. But for when y'all read this letter, it probably already happened. Regardless, a birthday shout-out from my favorite podcasters would be the best. Thanks, y'all.
Happy late birthday, Robbie.
Happy birthday to you. You live in a zoo. You look like a monkey. You smell like one, too. Robbie. That's all the letters. Goodbye.
Really? That's it? Okay, fine. We have things to sell you. Good heavens. Go to exileandguyvillebook.tumblr.com.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
To pay what you like.
I recorded the audiobook version
of your memoir.
Of my memoir that came out in 2006. It was never going to be an audiobook. It's long out of print. My publisher no longer exists.
Hooray.
Hooray. Yeah. So, I recorded an audiobook. You can go to exileandguyville book.tumblr.com.
Yes.
And pay what you want for it.
Right.
Any amount of money. If even a buck. Also, if you're so poor you can't even afford a dollar, I'll just give it to you. So
way to sell stuff there.
Yeah.
Radiohead. Also, of course, you can buy the Christmas book, $20, PayPal to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
And also for $1.99 a piece, the first 10 episodes of the Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife commentary tracks that we've recorded that you can listen to while you're watching these movies on DVD or just listen to them like a regular episode of the show. Our Christmas episodes, always so perfect at this time of year, White Christmas and Santa Claus. And on top of that, we've got The Apple and Two for the Road and Josie and the Pussycats and Clue and The Poseidon Adventure and What's Up Doc and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and Soupy Come Home. I did it!
All 10.
And at some point we're doing our Die Hard commentary, right, Dave?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Because I certainly didn't want to be reading Nothing Lasts Forever for nothing.
Correct.
So keep an eye out for that. We'll let you know when that one goes live. And, check out our friends in the podcast universe. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Go listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Gray and Matt. Catch me on What the Flick, I didn't mention before. I do reviews there as well. Go listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. Bibbs, having been laid up with knee surgery, has been watching a lot of Hallmark Channel Christmas movies.
It's incredible.
And he wants to tell you all about them.
That he has embarked upon of watching all of those movies.
Check out The Schmoes Know and The Game Night Guys, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes and leave us a nice review. We've actually gotten a couple lately and I forgot to pull the names, but I'll do that next time. You can also stream the program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us some nice feedback there as well. You can like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, join our Facebook group page and talk to other fans of the show about movies and the show and whatever else. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at LinoleumCast. And once again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, which is not just for PayPaling, but also for sending us like your best of the year lists or your worst of the year lists or just any old thing that you want to tell us about.
Your thoughts, your loves, dreams.
We want to hear them.
We don't want to know about your dreams. Tell us about any dreams you had.
No dreams, no.
What do you want us to get you for Christmas?
Use the secret.
Maybe you'll attract yourself a Christmas gift by using the secret. And
not by asking us.
Not from us, but
someone, maybe. You never know. All right. It's been lovely. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.